The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Now, there's been a lot of talk again this weekend and a lot of stuff across all the papers about the murder of Sophie Toscan-Duplantier in West Cork in 1996. And I suppose particularly about two documentaries that have been made about the case. One is an imminent Netflix production and the other starts on Sky Crime Tonight and it's all available to download on Now TV. And it's made by our own Jim Sheridan, who is, of course, director of movies like My Left Foot and In the Name of the Father. But this weekend, it was reported that the family of Sophie Toscan-Duplantier asked to be taken out of the Jim Sheridan documentary. I think because they felt it portrayed Ian Bailey, as who was the only suspect, I suppose, ever considered for the murder, as a victim. Jim Sheridan, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Jim. Jim, I got to watch all five of them, and I thought that you clearly were working with the family, and I thought that God, the stuff you had in there, the interviews with the parents and everything, it was heartbreaking stuff. And I thought, sensitively handled and everything. What happened?
Well, I don't really know. I think they saw, like you said, I think they saw the footage and thought that it inferred that there was a police hounding of Ian Bailey, and that, you know, maybe it raised suspicions that the conclusion reached in the French trial might not have been as sound as it looked, you know?
Yeah.
And they probably were upset. Like, you know, it's a very difficult position for them, you know? They're just not in a good place because they're in grief. They're maybe emotional, and like, I just don't know what it'd be like, you know. You can imagine yourself, you know.
Yeah. And I thought you did capture the pain that her parents are in very well by just simply observing it. I don't know if I presume those interviews have gone out of it now, but I think you said yourself they're trapped, that they can't grieve, they aren't allowed to let her go, and that they're stuck in this awful pain.
Yeah, they're stuck in this awful pain. It's kind of like, Brendan, I don't want to get philosophical or esoteric about it, but, you know, I think Psycho, the movie, introduced, drama without a God. You know, it was almost as if it was the first movie that kind of explicitly drove, well, if it didn't drive God out of the cinema, it definitely introduced the devil to the audience. And, you know, true crime is in that area, you know, and I think the difficulty is that once there's a tragedy like that, you may lose your faith momentarily in God or a just world, and it can only be restored by finding justice, you know? So it goes deeper than logic and deeper than normal emotions. It gets into the spiritual basis of your very existence.
Yeah, and of course, the name of your documentary, the subtitle is The Search for Justice for Sophie. So yeah. In terms of, and I want to come to Ian Bailey in a minute, but in terms of that French trial, which I would take from the documentary that you didn't think was a very fair trial, do you think the family felt they got justice there by virtue of at least he was found guilty, even if he will not be deported to France?
No, I don't think so. I think the difficulty was that trial performed two functions, which I don't think anybody has kind of clarified. It performed the function that would normally happen in French judicial legal process of an investigative investigation, you know, where you have a magistrate investigate the crime and then the police arrest you. Well, in France, you know, what would be our DPP comes before the police arrest you, whereas in Ireland it comes after the police arrest you. So the French would think that anybody arrested for a murder is arrested on very solid grounds. And they would never, ever allow the name of the person to be published. You know, that's just part of their... They take an arrest very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Where sometimes in Ireland and England, and to an extent in any common law jurisdiction, the arrests become a manipulative process of putting pressure, let's say, on the suspect, you know? Like, you'll see arrests in America where people are in chains, carried out, you know, and perhaps walked, but they may not be guilty, you know?
Okay, so you think the French would have misunderstood what happened in Ireland meant in terms of Bailey's guilt. Okay.
They misunderstood completely. Like, they think, look, he was arrested and he confessed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of a double barrel, because in France, a confession is, like, huge, even a hearsay confession. Now, I have experience of the way these confessions go, and at least in one or two cases, I know they're complete bullshit, you know?
Okay.
And so it's kind of like, if you imagine, Brendan, that you are put under a microscope, and somebody said, Brendan O'Connor did such and such, so invent the crime. Invent any crime that you could be guilty of. And to take an extreme example of it, like, let's take the Woody Allen situation where he's accused of something. Well, he can never speak for the rest of his life without that claim hanging over him, you know? And every word you would say and every utterance you'd make and every thing you would do would be viewed in the prism of which he's a murderer or worse, you know?
Okay.
And Bailey has been under that microscope for such a long time. And the thing about
it sounds like you have a certain sympathy for Ian Bailey, do you?
I do. Of course I do. I have an empathy and a sympathy for both sides of the equation.
Yeah.
In relation to Ian, he is so constructed that he's able to withstand huge amounts of publicity. Like, when I did my first interview for the Irish Times, and they asked me what I taught at the Abbey, and I said it was all the crap, and they put on crap, and they were crap, and it was, you know, I was one of the projects. And then I had to meet Tomás McKenna and Joe Dowling, and they were really disappointed with me. And I felt crushed, and I thought, you know, I'm going to be more careful in the future with any print interviews I do. But Ian doesn't have that. He doesn't seem to be as put out by what's in the press. He seems to be able to withstand it. And
there's a few questions come out of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
One is that I think one of the cops says at one point that Ian Bailey loves the attention. I think you say at another point something like that Ian Bailey kind of put himself at the centre of all this. Is he enjoying this notoriety in some kind of weird way and playing up to it? Jim?
Yes, I hear that question, Brendan, and I have to think, you know?
Yeah.
I would say that there was an element that's at points that, you know, I'd say if you were arrested and you didn't do it, that you're going to come out and, like, holding a press conference is not an unusual thing to do for somebody with nerves of steel. But normal person, they're hiding. So whether you can say he's enjoying it or protesting, it's kind of on that prism in between good and bad, you know. Yes, he probably takes a certain satisfaction from being in the newspapers and on the media and whatever. And then the other side of it is it's ruined his life.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely destroyed his life. So it's almost like, you know, you're making a rope to hang yourself, you know.
Jules Thomas says at one point about Ian that she says it's like he's performing all the time. He's never quite being himself. And I did think that you got frustrated with him as things went on and around the French trial. There was times that you were almost seemed to be saying to him, look, would you get real here? And he's making these Shakespearean speeches about everything. Is he performing all the time, never quite being himself?
No, I think performing is himself.
Okay.
You know, it's like, but in truth, with us all, there's an element of that, you know, that we don't know who we are. Marlon Brando said, he said, everybody's acting. It's the actors who know they're acting. And I think there is an element of truth to that, you know, that, you know, performance gives you an ability to see yourself in a different way. And, you know, and I don't think most people get that, you know, in their life. They just, they're not aware of the coats or the coats of armor they wear, you know?
Yeah. He says at one point, he says, I found the process of making the film, because, like, I should explain to people that you front this, and you're very much the person who's out there walking the stones and walking the land where it happened, and you seem to spend a lot of time with Ian Bailey during it as well. But yeah. Bailey says then at one point that he found the process of making the film, he called it the decanting, he calls it, he says, I'm finding this very therapeutic. Yeah. And I wonder then, is that uncomfortable for you? Like, you're in that situation, as you say, you have to develop this empathy and everything. You're practically moved in with them. Is it weird to think that you were giving him this decanting and this therapy, and that he's almost as if you're part of the film that he's in his own head?
Yeah, there's an element of that. But, like, to me, there's a greater truth, which is, what's the truth? What's the actual truth, you know? Mm-hmm. And the truth has to go tougher on the police than Ian Bailey. Like, they are the people who have the uniforms on. Yeah. They have the power. And why are we not focusing, you know, on that power and saying that the level of truth is a higher bar for the police, or it should be. They should have a higher bar of truth. And I don't think that has happened here. And there's a fear. There's a little fear in Ireland of, you know, the priests and the police and the whatever it is, you know. And there's also a fear of Bailey. People approach him as, oh, my God, the murderer.
Yeah.
And I realized at a certain point that Ian and anybody would be less interesting if they weren't the murderer. Like in Play by the Western World, which I would think is the primer drama for the Irish psyche, the playboy comes in and he says, I killed my father, Tuesday was a week. All the women fall in love with him, and then it turns out his father's not dead, and they all desert him, and then he kills him again and he's a hero again. And I think there's an element of truth in that, you know. There's an element of truth in that. To be the murderer, you're very interesting.
Okay, so we're in the dance with Bailey as well, then, is what you're saying. Jim, remind people, because I was kind of surprised as this came out throughout the documentary. What was the evidence against Ian Bailey?
Well, I would say that the two planks of the evidence are Marie Farrell seen him outside the shop and Marie Farrell seen him at Kilfather Bridge. So that's Exhibit A. That's... he was at the scene of the crime. He was out late. He was following her. And then I would say the second plank is Helen Callanan's saying that he confessed, and then the 14-year-old boy saying he confessed, and then the Shelleys a year. Those three confessions, yeah?
Yeah.
And I've had experience, personally, of the way confessions with Ian Bailey work, you know? And it's like it starts over here and it ends up over here as a Chinese whisper. Oh, he did it. He killed her, you know. And it's total bullshit. And Helen Callanan was sacking Ian Bailey. This was a
okay,
person.
No, Helen Callanan is not here. And look, Ian Bailey told her what he told her and she cooperated with the police. So I don't think there's any suggestion that she did anything unethical or wrong.
I'm not going to say that, Brendan. I'm not stupid and I'm not even putting that on Helen Callanan. But essentially she was saying, Ian, people say you're the killer. And in other words, like, you can't write any more articles for the newspaper.
Yeah.
So the there was a threat to him there. And then he said, yes, of course I did it to advance my journalistic career. Now, if anybody could seriously take that as a confession, I don't think you could. This is where the legal world fascinates me. all the statements are words written on paper where you have visuals that contradict it. And the visuals, an image is worth a thousand words. So all the statements in the world won't ever convince me that anybody is guilty, because they can be manipulated, changed, and whatever. And you can write that down. Yes, of course I did it. I killed her to advance my career. If that's a confession, I don't know what is, you know?
Yeah, and, yeah. Well, I suppose that's as much as it's as much as we have, is that stuff is written down in statements. But I see what you mean about tone being lost. And of course, the Mary Farrell evidence, we should just remind people, she then recanted and recanted with gusto, didn't she?
She did. And I found it extraordinary that she recanted, and instead of asking her the obvious question, for 20 years, everybody said, who was in the car with you? So I said to Marie, I don't care who was in the car. It's just so unimportant to me. It's so unimportant. It's like crap bullshit to ask her that question. And I'll say this, even in the High Court, it's crap bullshit.
Okay, we did, maybe stop using that word.
Okay.
I understand. Okay. I understand what you mean, but yeah, just in case somebody gets offended. Go on anyway, yeah.
But what I mean by that is, there is another question to ask Marie, which is, if it wasn't Ian Bailey, who was it? Why did nobody ever ask that question for 20 years?
So there was never really anyone else considered after the first few days, was there?
Well, when I tell you that the very first thing Marie Farrell put to paper, which she didn't put to paper, which is the way all her statements happened, which was, a thing taken down by a policeman, was that she said the man was 5'8", he was sallow complexion, and he was wearing a beret. That's the first, without any indication, without any pressure on her, without anything. Why was that person never pursued?
Okay. Now,
and the other thing, look, Brendan, to go back, I'm not saying that, you know, they didn't, whoever interrogated Marie in the High Court wasn't doing their job. That's, I agree, that's what their job is. They're the defense for the state. But I'm just saying, in the general context of things, why didn't somebody stand back and say, you know what, if it wasn't Ian Bailey outside the shop, let's not even rule him out as the killer. But let's say he wasn't outside the shop or at Kilfather Bridge. Who was?
Mm. Jim, you said earlier about that he's had his life ruined by this. Over the course of the, I suppose he features in episode 3, 4, and 5 a lot, and it is like a compelling portrait of this person. He seems to be drinking a lot, quite messy at times and everything. Do you think, and then seems, you know, quite kind of mad on some levels. Do you think that this is what, did this do this to him, or was he always this person?
I think it did it to him. I think it's had a very heavy psychological effect on him. I think he was always a little bit of the poetic temperament. Brendan Behan and Dylan Thomas drank themselves to death way before Ian Bailey. And they were very, very highly intelligent artists and very highly strung. And, you know, it's just a condition of trying to be creative, I think, you know. And so there's a combination. He was always the creative type. And everybody gives out about his poetry as if this is a sin, you know, as if he's not a good poet, so therefore. Well, he's actually not bad. And I would think he exists more in the balladeer tradition, more in the, you know, Patrick Galvin, Mad Woman of Cork tradition. And Patrick Galvin was a respected poet. And I would say, of anybody, that's who Ian Bailey is closest to, you know?
Okay. Just to finish up, I felt you became quite close to Sophie Sonner. It seemed like that, certainly from watching it. And he kept the house, and he goes there now with his own kids. And he says the house is like his mother now.
Yeah. when I met him, there was a moment where he took down his mother's coat and put it on his wife, you know. And
yeah.
I just thought that was, like, profound. It's like these people were given no chance to pursue justice. But it says in the documentary, and I'm very surprised people haven't picked it up, the Irish police were not allowed to interrogate anybody in France. Like, in what world?
Yeah.
Are you not allowed to speak to the husband of the deceased? In what investigation does that happen?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, you have the cop who kind of tells that quite dramatically, doesn't he, that they arrived over in France, went down to the local station or whatever, and are told, basically, go home, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there is a statement from Daniel Tusk and the Plantier, and unfortunately, he's dead, so he can't speak for himself, but it's from the French police, probably taken with a lawyer. But, like, it's, and I'm not in for one second inferring anything about Tuscan that he was involved in anyway, but, and I actually don't think he was, but it's just too absurd. I think the Irish authorities should have just said, you know what, we can't investigate, there's no investigation.
Mm.
Because I wouldn't, why would you, you know, the police kept coming up with this line. And I think in most of the, if they did wrong, they did wrong because they were desperately trying to find somebody. They didn't do wrong because their bad guy is out to get Ian Bailey, you know. Mm. I think initially they were just going, we have to get somebody, and they were too emotionally involved. And that's not the job of police. And they never, like, I don't know, they never stood back from it and said, look, you know, somebody says, oh, it had to be a local. No, it didn't have to be a local. That's the most ridiculous comment I've ever heard in my life. Like, most of the locals don't know where Sophie lives. So I've asked locals there just as a test. They say, oh, do you know where Sophie is? Yeah. And they drive me to Bantry or somewhere, you know.
Mm.
And they get lost. But, you know, and you have to change that sentence to, it had to be somebody who knew where she lived, which is a much more precise definition of a hunt for a clue, rather than had to be a local. Okay, had to be a local, so it couldn't have been anybody from Cork City. Had to be a local, so it couldn't be anybody from France. Had to be a local, so it couldn't be anybody from Paris. Had to be a local, but there's a man with sallow complexion, 5'8", and a beret. Following her. Following Sophie.
Okay. Jim, it's a very, very compelling piece of work. They sent me two episodes, and I got straight back to them and said I need to see the rest of it and gorge it in one go. It is really compelling on so many levels. It's called Murder in the Cottage, The Search for Justice for Sophie, and it begins on Sky Crime tonight, but I think it's all available on Now TV from today, and you probably will find yourself binging it. Jim Sheridan, thanks very much. Let's take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.